Hello, and welcome to the American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. I'm Lindsay Mayland, and I'm so excited to be here with you. Did anyone watch the Oscars last night? I just love award shows. I just think it's so fun to see people get dressed up and get honored for something that they put a lot of time and work into. And it just got me thinking that if there was a grand quilting award show, what would I be nominated for? So I asked my coworkers to have a little fun and share their thoughts on what award they'd win for quilting. I love the idea of taking the time to just, you know, be proud of yourself and kind of be impressed with your own skills and not be afraid to share it with the world. So I'm going to pass the mic off so our staff can make their acceptance speeches.
I'm Jody Sanders. If I were to give myself a quilting award, it would be the Maker of Mini Magic. I love to take full-size quilt block patterns and reduce them in size. The most popular size of a quilt block is 12 inches square, but for me, that just seems huge. I will probably reduce that down to about a 4-inch square. Yes, I know, it's futzy. Hey, that is a real word, I checked. But I love the look of a small quilt block. I used to make bed-sized quilts, but now I'm more apt to make a small wall hanging. To get accuracy with small pieces, I use foundation paper piecing. I draft patterns on graph paper or use EQ, and then I copy the pattern onto lightweight newsprint. I also enjoy English paper piecing, and when doing EPP, I typically scale down the size of the pieces then too. So for example, instead of a 1-inch hexagon, I'm more likely to use my quilt with a 1/2-inch hexagon. I also love to do fussy cutting, and that for me is easier with smaller pieces. By making smaller quilts, I can work out a design idea or a color combo without the time and materials it takes to make a larger project.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Stumbo, Art Director for American Patchwork and Quilting. If I were to receive a quilting award, it would probably be for owning the smallest fabric stash. To many quilters, this may not seem like something to be particularly proud of. But owning a small fabric stash is what works best for me. Now, I'm a firm believer that every quilter should own the amount of fabric that brings them the most joy. And for me personally, owning a small curated collection of fabric brings me the most joy. Now, I used to have a larger stash, and I would find myself randomly purchasing fat quarters that I fell in love with when shopping. But then I never got around to using them, and they would just sit being unused and unloved. Instead of my fabric collection inspiring me, it was doing the exact opposite. It often made me feel overwhelmed and stressed out. I suppose the best way I can describe it is that I would look at my fabric stash, and I would just see one never-ending to-do list, but one without a plan. So over the past 2 years, I have de-stashed and donated a lot of my fabrics. All of my fabrics now fit inside of a medium-sized plastic bin, and every fabric is assigned to a specific pattern that I know I will make one of these days. Now, don't get me wrong, I still love fabric shopping, and I often give myself permission to purchase new fabrics and patterns. It only means that I purchase fabrics for a specific project in mind, though. Now, the downside of having a small fabric stash is that it is very difficult to make scrappy quilts. And I love seeing what other people make with their scrappy fabrics and their big fabric stash. However, the benefits of having a small stash far outweigh any negatives for me personally. The positives I experience by owning less fabric is that I have less clutter in my very small sewing space. I rarely experience buyer's remorse. And most important is that I feel more creative and more motivated. For those reasons, I proudly award myself the Smallest Stash Award.
This is editor Doris Brunette. If I were to give myself a quilting award, it would probably be first-rate fussy cutter. I sew mostly with medium to large scale prints and planning my projects and my cutting to be able to highlight a favorite part of a design or a cute motif from a novelty print just makes me happy. Two of my favorite fabric designers are Tula Pink and Heather Ross. Anyone familiar with their designs can understand how both designers' fabrics lend themselves to fussy cutting. I've finished 3 quilts so far in 2022, and 2 of the 3 include fussy cutting, of tiny pieces no less. In July of 2019, I finished a wall quilt with 13 feathered star blocks and 4 small setting stars, and every piece of the stars are fussy cut from various Heather Ross prints. A lot of people think that's nuts, but I have fun making quilts this way and it brings me joy. So, when I travel or just can't be near my sewing machine, I enjoy doing English paper piecing to keep my hands and mind occupied. My EPP pieces are almost always fussy cut. I think fussy cutting appeals to me because of the way I've always looked at the world. As a child, I was obsessed with anything in miniature and the visual details of everything, flowers, toys, book illustrations, you name it. I spent a lot of my free time drawing, and my dream was to illustrate books when I grew up. Actually, it kind of still is my dream. But for now, I'll stick to fussy cutting and illustrating with fabric.
Hi, I'm Allison, the designer of Quilts and More, and I'd give myself an award for choosing fabrics. Nothing is more exciting to me than pulling together different fabrics at the start of a new project. As a graphic designer, I'm constantly working with color and figuring out pleasing palettes. This skill translates perfectly into quilting. Of course, color isn't the only factor to consider when curating fabrics. Print, scale, and style must also be taken into consideration. This is the part of the quilting process that I enjoy the most. Making sure all these elements come together in a pleasing way is a fun and satisfying challenge, made even more enjoyable when I see the finished quilt and it looks exactly how I'd imagined. Although combining colors comes easily to me, I've had to learn how to combine prints through trial and error throughout my quilting journey. When I first started out, I used fabric collections, so I didn't have to worry about prints working together. All the work was done for me. After using collections, I came to learn that the variety in print and scale were essential to making the overall look a success. I applied what I was seeing in collections into my own fabric pulls. For example, if I have a busy floral print, I make sure to balance it out with a small tone-on-tone polka dot. For every print I select from my stash, I also try to grab one that visually balances it out. Once I have all my fabrics selected, I take a step back and evaluate if everything is working together. From there, I either go with what I have or do a bit of substituting. Selecting fabrics and combining them in new ways brings me so much joy. When I'm in a creative rut, I sometimes just sit on the floor with all my fabric and play with different combinations, even if I have no plans on using them in a quilt.
Hey, it's Lindsay. It's my turn to share what I'd be nominated for. And I think I would win the award for quilt math and changing a pattern for my needs. I've rarely ever made a quilt how it's written. I'm so bad at it. I see a pattern and immediately think how I'd want to change it. Could be changing the layout, changing the colors, changing even the construction method, and even changing the size of the pieces and the blocks used in the quilt. I just cannot help it. Here's an example. So I was recently making a granny square quilt that was written for 1.5-inch squares. But my scraps are cut into 2.5-inch squares, and I did not feel like cutting new pieces. So I ended up using my scraps, which changed the size of the blocks, and that also changed the number of blocks I needed to make the quilt. And then I also changed the layout because I wanted the quilt to be more rectangular instead of square like the pattern. And then I had to redo all the math for the borders. So I think I will never settle for making a pattern one way. If I can make a pattern for my exact space, my exact fabrics, and my exact needs, and that kind of skill has opened a whole wide world of patterns and even inspiration up to me. And this is actually a really funny award to give myself because I went to school for journalism because I hated math. Math was not my friend. Words were my friend. So it's very funny that my journalism career ended up being a lot of math and a lot of writing too. But I'm just very proud of myself that I can do the hard math and that I can write and alter quilt patterns as I need. So it's a skill I never thought I'd have, but it's one I'm excited to excel at. So I'd love to hear the quilting award you'd give yourself. So please email me at apqpodcast@meredith.com and let me know. It's time to celebrate yourself and I want to help and, you know, send positive emails back and forth. So we're going to take a quick ad break now, but when we come back, we're chatting with Jen Kingwell. Welcome back. I'm handing the mic over to Elizabeth for her chat with the amazing Jen Kingwell. Jen is an Australian quilt store owner, fabric and pattern designer, and she just published her second book called Quilt Recipes. I am just so, so thrilled that we could figure out the time difference to get this interview with her. So please enjoy.
Well, Jen, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. We are just so thrilled to have you here. And I just have to say it's perfect timing because this week I'm actually working on the layouts for the profile story that we're featuring for you in our August issue of American Patchwork and Quilting. So I am just so thrilled that our podcast listeners get to have this kind of a sneak peek introduction to you.
Fantastic. It's lovely to be here.
Yeah. So you are such a prolific quilter and designer and business owner. I was thinking we could just start right at the beginning and just have you describe a little bit about your journey to where you're at right now in quilting.
Look, I feel like I was led down a path to do this really, because none of it, I know this sounds really weird, but none of it was really my idea. Mm-hmm. The shop came first and I bought into that with a friend because she was sort of just going through a time in her life where she was looking for something different and found a quilt shop that was for sale, wanted to buy it, but didn't want to do it on her own. So I joined her in that, but it was on a very part-time basis because I was still, I'm a midwife by trade. So I was still working as a midwife and I just, you know, she really ran the shop and I'd just float in and out and have a bit of a play with fabric a couple of days a week or something. So that was sort of the beginning. And then she retired and I ended up with the quilt shop. But and then Sue Spargo came to teach and she really encouraged me to start doing like patterns of the quilts that I'd made that, you know, at the time I was just printing out a handwritten pattern in the shop and giving it out to people that would, you know, wanted to make something. So it was really Sue that got me started on the journey and I'm very grateful to her. So I every step along the way, some amazing person has been sort of responsible for getting me into doing what I'm doing. So I would, without them, I'd still be delivering babies probably and not just sort of doing a bit of stitching on the weekend. So I have lots of really talented and wonderful people to thank for the journey.
I love that when people can lift up other people in the same industry and kind of help them along the way. That's such a great story. So, and I'm sure you do the same for other designers after you.
I will try. Yeah.
So were you a quilter before you owned the shop part-time?
I was. I made my very first quilt in the early 70s. When I started my nursing training, we had to live in the accommodation house. And the very first night there, I went to the communal sitting room and people were making English like doing English paper piecing and making mm-hmm. a grandmother's flower garden quilt. And so I thought, I had this little box of scraps that I'd collected over the years. My mum's best friend was a beautiful seamstress. And so I'd gathered all her little scraps because I was, you know, right back as a little child, I was interested in colour and textiles, clearly didn't mm-hmm. really understand what I was doing, but I was collecting scraps right back then. So I gathered those scraps, and the very first quilt I made, I think I was probably 18, and that was a grandmother's flower garden quilt. So it, and you know, I went off and tried all sorts of other crafts over the years. Like everybody, I've had a go at everything, you know, from macrame to mosaics and ceramics and all sorts of things. But I always kept coming back, you know, there was always a quilt being made that punctuated everything else I tried. So that was sort of always the, I guess, the fundamental craft that really sort of struck me, my heartstrings. So,
yeah, well, I have to say, when I, you know, was first introduced to your quilting and met you at Quilt Market years and years ago, I was instantly just like enamored with your style. You have such a very specific aesthetic, and I can look at, you know, one of your patterns or your fabric lines, and I'm like, that is a Jen Kingwell original. Like, I know that is her pattern. For any of our listeners that might not be familiar with your style yet, can you kind of explain a little bit about what makes your patterns yours?
It's really funny you say that, Elizabeth, because I sometimes struggle that I have a unique look. I sometimes worry that it's just sort of, I don't know. You know how, I guess it's hard to sometimes look at your own work and be objective, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But I'm a relatively traditional quilter. Like, I don't, a lot of the blocks I use are, you know, blocks that are in the, you know, public domain. I love things like churn dash and orange peel blocks and things like that. So I do design new blocks occasionally, but I do use a lot of really traditional blocks. And I guess the fabric, as far as the fabric goes, is I love, well, you know, I love a lot of fabric, a lot of different fabric in one quilt. So I am a true scrap quilter. Mm-hmm. And I think, for me, it's all about the colour. You know, like for me, making a quilt is about the choice of colour and print. And I don't love things that match incredibly well. Like, I like that little point of difference with colour that really, I want to say, it creates tension in a quilt. You know, like if something's just not exactly the same shade, or it's just not quite right, I think that's what adds a lot of visual interest. So mm-hmm. I find that question really hard, to be honest.
Yeah,
I just make what true. I love.
Yeah, oh, I love that. Yeah. Well, and I think, like, what you were saying about fabrics is that, yeah, that tension, it's like, I look at some of your fabrics and I'm like, oh, I would never have thought to pair those fabrics or those patterns together. But every time you do, it just is beautiful. And the end result is just so stunning. And I feel like some of those things that maybe other quilters might shy away from, like combining bold stripes with like delicate florals, like, you embrace that a lot of the time.
Yeah, I do. And I always say that when I'm teaching a class and we're talking about this, a lot of people will, you know, for example, might say, I love contemporary fabrics. So they will never shop the reproduction section of a store because that's reproduction. I don't, you know, like reproduction fabrics. But there are so many things that work together. So you can put some of those quirky reproduction stripes, or, you know, just some of those, like the poison greens, the cheddars and things that pop up in reproduction, that will work so beautifully with a contemporary line of fabric. And so I always say, shop the entire store. Like, don't sort of say, I'm only going to use I'm only going to use reproduction fabric. Like, you need to sort of, I think, have a look at everything together, and then, you know, like, yeah, it just it adds visual interest as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. So when you so you're also a fabric designer for Moda, and you've had several fabric collections. Is that something, when you're sitting down and designing your own fabric collections, that you keep in mind, that you want it to kind of break across, like, definition almost, and like you don't want to be necessarily classified as like contemporary or a certain category?
Yeah, that I do try and sort of, I think about that. And the other thing that I know it sounds like a bizarre thing, but I try and design a range of fabric that is going to look like a scrap quilt when it's completed. So it sort of goes against, I guess, what a lot of other designers, when they're designing a line of fabric, they want it to coordinate and work really well together. I'm trying to sort of think about, when we put these prints together, that you will get that scrappy quilt look from one fabric range. And sometimes it works better than others, I will admit. Some of my fabric ranges have been more successful than others, but that's sort of part of what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what makes it so unique too, because for someone like myself, I'm not a big scrappy person. I don't have a big fabric collection. But I look at your quilts that are scrappy and I'm like, I want to achieve that look. And how do I do that if I don't have an extensive stash? Well, I can purchase your fabrics, and you've already kind of helped set that tone. So I really appreciate that about your fabrics.
Thank you.
So I think they're really fun. Where do you find your inspiration when you're sitting down and working on a new fabric line or a new pattern?
You know, it's like that old saying of inspiration's everywhere. It's so true. And I think one of the best lessons in life that I ever had was, I was really fortunate one to spend a day with Kay Fassett and Brandon Mabley, and we went to a couple of art museums, and it was, and then had a walk through like a garden, and just sort of spent the day together having a look at things. And I watched Kay and how he looked at the world, and he pointed out a couple of things to me during the day that I thought, I literally have been through this part of town a million times and I've never noticed that, because it was the shadow that the tram, you know, that we have trams, like trolley cars, it was the shadow that the wires that they run on made on the road from this. And I thought, I have literally driven through this intersection thousands of times and I've never once noticed that. And so it, for me, he opened up a whole new sort of way of looking at just common day things to see print and pattern, and it was a really wonderful experience.
Yeah, that sounds incredible. What a great opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. I was very fortunate.
Great. Well, so we've talked a little bit about your patterns and your fabric lines. Now I want to talk about your book, because you've published your very first book.
Well, it's actually my second book, but it's the first one that we've published. Yeah. That's so published. I did one, I think, that came out in 2015, which was the very first one I did. But this one, we self-published. Just I had this like really clear vision about what I wanted, and I wanted it to be exactly what I wanted it to be. So I felt that we had to do it ourselves so that we could get that translation and have it finished that way. So it was a huge learning curve, because it was just a really small team that worked on it. And it was fun, but it was a big learning curve for us.
Yeah, I bet. So the book is called Quilt Recipes. And it's really unique format. And it is just like, when I hold it in my hand, I just have to tell our listeners, like, it is beautiful. Like the feel of it, the look of the photography, every detail is just stunning. So congratulations. Like, I feel like you've definitely achieved what you set out to do. So it's called Quilt Recipes. Could you tell us a little bit more about what readers could find inside of the book?
So the name was just such a simple, we were trying to come up with like some fancy name, so the book contains both quilt patterns and my recipes from my childhood. And so when we were working on it, and we had some, you know, a mood board, we had on one side quilts and on the other side recipes. And so we were looking for a name, and then we're like, quilt recipes. Like, you know. And my first book was called Quilt Lovely. So we thought it sort of follows that theme of, you know, so that's how the name came about, which was quite funny. But I had this idea of doing this book for, I say 10 years, but I think probably now it's more like 15 years or something. And I'd always thought I wanted to, my mum wasn't a crafter or a sewer in any way, but she was a beautiful baker. And so she, growing up as a child, if, you know, anyone from the birth of a baby to, you know, someone losing a loved one, mum would show her love language, I guess, for the want of a better word, in food. And there was always a big bake up, and she'd pack it beautifully in a basket with a, you know, check tablecloth, and a bundle of food would be left for people on their door. And I, you know, it's a very country thing, I think, to do here in Australia. So I'd sort of grown up with that. I guess it was just such a fond memory for me. Mm. And now I find that people will make a handmade gift for someone in a similar way. So, you know, like, it, nothing says you love someone or care about someone as much as some sort of handmade gift. And so I came up with this idea that I wanted to sort of marry the two together and showcase the family recipes that I had grown up with, but also then with what I do and how I show, you know, love and affection to my family and what have you by making things. So that was the concept behind it. But there was a lot of talk about it, and it probably took the good old coronavirus to really sort of, you know, I wasn't traveling for work. I had more time on my hands. And so it was like, and we had the right team together. So it was, we'll do it now. So yeah, that's how it came about.
Oh, that's great. Well, I see a lot of, I mean, I love what you say about, you know, people doing gifting handmade things, whether it's food or quilts, because I do feel like a lot of those things like punctuate milestones in people's life. You have a baby, you drop off a casserole and you drop off a baby quilt, someone gets married, the same kind of thing. So it's such a unique idea to think about how quilting and baking has those similarities. And also I think I read this in your book that you said that both quilts and food symbolize comfort.
Yes. Yes.
That's really special.
Very much. I feel that's very much the case. You know, like, if you're feeling a bit down, to snuggle up in a quilt and have a cookie, you know, has to brighten up your day.
Sounds like the perfect solution.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, and you ended up dedicating the book to your mom, right?
Yeah, I did. Oh, I so did. Sweet. She was a very special lady, my mum. So, my parents were very community minded. They, you know, farmers, but they'd help anybody out and do anything. And they're very special people. But it was my mum that was the baker, not my dad. He just ate it.
He got to enjoy all the fruits of her labor.
He did. Yeah. He did.
And are most of the recipes, or all of the recipes, hers? You said they're from your childhood.
They are. The recipes are all things that I grew up with. And I think the chocolate cake, I now make a chocolate ganache for it, which that wasn't something my mum did. It would just have chocolate icing on top of it. But a couple of things have been slightly tweaked, but really they are all recipes that were from my mum. She had this big sort of leather bound book that had all, you know, snippets out of newspapers of recipes and handwritten recipes. And one thing that she always, which I've tried to do in the, be true to in the book too, she always wrote who had given her that recipe. So it was always like Lillian's chocolate cake or Maisie's ginger biscuits, you know, so that was always punctuated throughout so that you could follow the family tree of recipes. So
yeah. Oh, that's so cool.
Hey, it's Lindsay. I'm so sorry to interrupt, but we have to take a quick ad break. We'll be back soon with more from Jen.
So we talked a little bit about the recipes. What about the patterns in the book? Are they, I know you use templates a lot in your patterns, and you also personally love to hand quilt. And I noticed that some of the patterns in the book also are for hand quilting and also for machine quilting. Was that something you were really excited to include?
Yeah, look, I think in my perfect world, I would hand piece and hand quilt absolutely everything, because I love the process. I always say that I need a bottle of tranquilizers beside my sewing machine, because I'm not a fantastic machine stitcher. But I do understand that not everybody wants to sew their quilts by hand. So I sort of felt it was important to have a little of each in the book so that there was something in there that everybody could perhaps have a go at making. And, you know, but yeah, I just love to hand piece. So that's what I usually do.
Yeah, well, it's beautiful. I can't wait to dig into it myself more and hopefully make a recipe and maybe even a quilt one of these days from it.
Fantastic.
So, beautiful. Okay, so let's transition here a little bit and talk a little bit about your shop. So you've had this textile shop for a while. And yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that? It's located in, I hope I'm saying this correctly, Torquay, Australia.
Perfect.
Thank you.
That's exactly
thanks,
how
thanks
you
say Thanks to Google
it.
For that one. So what makes your shop so special? What do you love about it?
Do you know, it's, so this, I've owned Amity Textiles for, I think the shop itself is 18 years old. And but we moved it from Melbourne, you know, big city, down to the Torquay's a coastal town, so it's a surf beach and a surf town. So and not terribly big. I think during winter it's probably got somewhere between 10 and 15,000 residents, and then in summer it sort of blows up because it's a resort town. But we moved down here to live, and then once again led down a path because the shop in Melbourne, I was told by the owner that they weren't going to renew the lease because they were going to demolish the building and build apartments on the site. So we had to move the store, and we thought, let's move it, you know, closer to where we live. And we just found this amazing old, it's actually in an industrial area. It's in an old sandstone warehouse. It's got these really high ceilings. So the ceilings are about 9 meters, so 28 feet or something like that. So really high ceilings. So we've got huge scope to hang quilts. And it's just big and open and sort of inviting. But I guess the best part about it was it had room to put a cafe in there. So we have a cafe, which, you know, ties in with the book so well because we have a pastry chef, Tana, who bakes everything on site. So it's all homemade and just delicious. And so the store smells amazing because there's always coffee brewing and cakes baking. So yeah, it just adds sort of like another sensory dimension to walking into a fabric store. I mean, we're already hit with color and print and all sorts of things like that, but then you have the sensory experience of all those amazing smells. So it to me, it's like a marriage made in heaven.
Sounds like a quilter's paradise. I would never want to leave.
It's a bit of a trip. I actually used to have my studio was in the store. Mm-hmm. So we've got offices upstairs and I had my studio there, but the coffee, the cake, and then just the interruptions, and that was me interrupting myself by going downstairs to play and talk to people all day. I've actually moved. I work mostly from my studio at home now just because I'm a bit more prolific when I'm here.
Probably a little bit more focused. I totally understand that. Well, it sounds like an amazing place that you've created and an amazing community too that you've created. So
yeah, it's pretty special.
Host lots of events there too in classes, or
you know, that was the whole idea. We've got like quite a big workshop area. We can seat 32 people really comfortably, but mm-hmm. And also when we were designing it, everything is on wheels, so the fabric shelves and everything, if we want to sort of host a bigger event, we can move everything to one side, mm-hmm. which is pretty special. And we were having and doing some amazing events. And then, of course, you know, the last two years, we haven't really done anything at all. We used to have things like lunch club where Tana, our chef, would cook lunch for everybody while they, you know, sat and mm-hmm. stitched for the day. And we had a whole weekend retreat called Handcrafted, which was going to become an annual event, but of course we haven't had that for a couple of years. And but we're just sort of starting to think about getting the workshops up and running again now. I've been a little bit tentative about every time we seem to plan something, we'd get another wave of COVID, and you know, everything would be sort of closed down again. So we've really taken our time to get started again with all that sort of thing. It's been a tough couple of years for everybody, yes, hasn't it?
It has. Well, it doesn't sound like you've been bored during that time since you've been busy with your book and everything else. So you've made good use of it. So
I have.
Well, you mentioned a little bit that you now have your sewing space in your home. What is your sewing space like? Is it, you know, do you thrive in a very clean, organized environment? Do you have a lot of UFOs everywhere? What is that like?
My sewing space is fairly plain and simple compared to a lot of people's sewing space. I like clean lines and surfaces, and I don't have to have, you know, where a lot of people in their sewing room or studio, they have to have a stash of what they need to make something. I use my store as my stash. Mm-hmm. So I don't, you know, I work on literally on, I've got some tubs that each project goes into that I'm working on, and the rest of the stash is at my store. Yeah. I'm not so neat and tidy in my room at the store. There's a bit of a mess there because it can be messy there. But I guess with being at the coast, we've got a lot of windows in the house, so there's not a huge amount of wall space to put things. It's just very clean lines and surfaces and some nice artwork on the wall and sewing machine at one end of my desk and my little design area at the other. And then I've got a cutting table in the middle and that's and a comfy chair to sit and stitch in. And that's all that's in there. Yeah.
Yep. And of course your dog nearby to keep you company.
Yes, she's right underneath my feet at the moment as we speak.
Gotta love it. Gotta get them involved in it too. So do you have any exciting projects happening in the future you can share with us? Another book maybe or a fabric line?
I was thinking I've got a fabric line that I'm working on at the moment. I'm not the most prolific moda designer, that's for sure. I probably only really do about one line a year. So I am working on that at the moment. I would love to share some things with you, but I have got a couple of secret projects I'm working on that aren't actually therefore like a third party, so I have to keep them under wraps. I am just in the design process now for a new block of the month program that will run from my shop later in the year. I'm thinking we might run it as a mystery. I'm not quite sure, but I've sort of got a fair bit of it planned and several of the blocks made. And then there's always a few UFOs lying around. Like I posted on Instagram the other day, I found a thing that I'd completely forgotten I'd ever started, and I was just sort of looking for something else. I was like, what's in that bag there? Oh, my heavens, I forgot I started that. It was just like a little robbing Peter to pay Paul pattern. So I've dragged that out and pinned it up on the design wall just to remind myself that it's there to stitch. Yeah. So quite often, I mean, it's really, I think sometimes that when I was working on cook recipes and I was very quiet on social media, I think people just thought I was sitting around sort of, you know, having a lovely time on the beach or something. But there are so many things that you, as a designer, and everybody will have the same problem that you might be working on, as I said, for a third party, or like it might be something going into a magazine or something like that you can't share. And also you don't want to share, like for my book, I didn't want to share things too soon because we do live in a bit of an instantaneous world. So if you post something, people want the pattern right then and there. And you know, with a publication, it takes some time to actually, you know, get it to fruition. So you don't want to share too early. And also you don't want to give good ideas away too early, because there are very prolific people out there that sometimes will make it before you're even you know, ready to get it out there. So it's sometimes you just have to sit a little quietly on what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a delicate balance of
A tease.
You know, people engage in teasing, but not teasing in a bad way.
Exactly. Exactly.
Getting people excited without getting your hearts broken.
So right.
Well, we will anxiously await your future projects, I'm sure. Whatever they are, they'll be amazing.
They're coming. They are coming.
Good. We'll be anxious for them. Well, I love to wrap up all of our interviews with what we call some rapid fire questions. So I have 5 questions for you that I'll ask you, and whatever comes to mind first, just blurt it out. All right. Number 1, what step of the quilting process do you most enjoy?
The fabric choices.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I could see that. Yep. Number 2, do you have a favorite notion or product that you couldn't quilt without?
I use my little portable design wrappy thing all the time because I travel a lot and I cut out my pieces and put them in there. Mm-hmm. So it's something I use every single day.
And that's the product that you created yourself, right? It's like a little roll up thing.
Yep. Yes.
That's so clever. Yeah. Okay. What is a quilt project that you are currently working on?
So I am working on my new block of the month for me, but I do also have 2 other secret projects in the pipeline.
Okay. More secrets. I see. Okay. And this was a good one. What is a favorite recipe that you like to bake for special occasions?
So the powder puffs out of quilt recipes is something that I do for if like birthdays and things, or if we're having, you know, guests over, I will bake them. And they're the most requested thing, I think, that my family, they all go. Yeah. If I ever say, what do you want for your birthday? It's always powder puffs. So.
We always have to have one of those recipes in our back pocket that like we're known for, right?
Exactly.
That's great. They look so good. Okay, last question. What do you love about being a quilter and part of the quilting community?
The people. I have met some of the most amazing people. Like I really like people now that I, you know, truly call great friends. I've met just through stitching and quilting. So yeah, definitely has to be the people in the community. Yep.
Great. Well, Jen, thank you so much for being a guest on our podcast. I've loved our conversation with you. And just to like tease our audience and listeners a little bit, I think they're going to love seeing the profile feature in the magazine where they can see, you know, a lot of the things we've talked about, your shop, your space, and all of your beautiful patterns. So thank you. It's been such fun talking with you today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. And I hope I'm going to be at market in October. So I hope I'll see you.
Okay. Oh, that would be so great. And I cannot wait to try and make those ginger biscuits from your book. They look so delicious.
They are good. They're good. Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much.
Okay. Fantastic. Thanks. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Lindsay. Thanks so much to Jen and Elizabeth for that chat. I could listen to Jen talk all day. She just has so much wisdom to share, and I love that in a world where many of us are kind of rushing forward on our projects and our life, that she is finding these ways to push back on us about those notions and encourage us to enjoy the process, slow down our stitching, play with color and fabric, and find ways to cherish our quilting friendships and make time for them. I'm just feeling so inspired after that chat, and I can't wait to pick up a copy of Jen's book and just savor the experience of reading it. We'll link to Jen's website and her social media in our show notes so that you can connect with her more. And also, we mentioned a few times that Jen's profile featuring beautiful photos of her store and her sewing studio is coming up in our August issue of American Patchwork and Quilting. And you definitely don't want to miss it. It's so beautiful. So if you're not already a subscriber, you can save 60% off a 1-year subscription through our podcast show notes. So visit our show notes, and toward the top of the page, you'll see a link to subscribe. And if you subscribe soon, your first issue will be that August issue. So no time like the present. Thanks everyone for joining us, and have the best week.